announcing it again next week, but please join our group's ministry because that is how we grow together as a church. Jumping into our lesson this morning, we've got a lot of text, but I think this is one of those areas of the Bible where the text kind of speaks for itself. So we're going to throw some text up there. We're going to present the message. I don't think I have to do a lot of preaching the message. I think I can just present it God's way, and you guys will see what God has for us to learn this morning. So we're in part four of our In the Wilderness sermon series. We're in the book of Numbers. Last week in part three, we talked about moving where God moves. And so we saw as God takes his people off of Mount Sinai, headed towards the promised land, he's teaching them how to trust him, how to obey him, how to get in his rhythm and move where he moves. And so now as we get ready for part four, we're about to see the rebellion and the disobedience set in. There's a lot for us to see in this text this morning. So let me offer a quick prayer, and then we're going to jump in. God, we come to you now just to pray for your preached word this morning. God, you have given me some level of aptitude or talent or skill to be able to do this. And I know that if I put all of those together, it still doesn't even get close to being able to proclaim your glory. And so, God, we just ask that you do not abandon me to my resources this morning, that you don't put this on me, that your word is preached by your power, by your spirit, for your glory, for your name's sake. God, we just ask that this message hit our hearts, not because of anything I say, but because of who you are and what you are doing. And so, God, my prayer this morning is that you will just do remarkable things in the hearts of our listeners this morning. By your power, not mine, we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Numbers chapter 11, beginning in verse 1, let's jump in. God is moving his people towards the promised land. He's given them a purpose. He's given them a promise. He's given them provision. He's given them protection. He's gathered them around a people, and he's gathered all of his people around his very presence so that all they have to do is trust him, depend on him, and then move where he moves. Now, the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Now, here's the thing. God is not mad when you complain. He's mad when you complain about the things that he's already promised and already provided and already gifted you with. And so there's two plots in Numbers chapter 11. There's what all the people are doing, and there's what Moses is doing, and both of them are complaining. The people of God are complaining, and the leader of those people, Moses, is also complaining. The difference is Moses is complaining about them. They're complaining about what God's doing, and Moses is complaining about what the people are doing. And so we see God answer Moses' prayer and help Moses out of his tough situation, but we see God punish his people for a similar complaint. And so what we're going to see is, when is it okay to complain to God? Because Moses gets away with it, his people do not. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip a lot of the parts that are just focused on Moses and his leadership, because that's going to carry over into chapters 12, chapter 13, chapter 14. And so we'll pick back some of the parts that we're missing this morning from there. So right now we're focused on the people and their complaints. God's anger is burning towards the complainers, towards the people in his entourage here. The fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. So they've been warned, right? Everybody sees just right there in verse 1 and 2 that the people are complaining that God's not providing for them, that he's not going to come through for them. They don't trust him. And all God has been doing for them, he's gotten them through Egypt. He's gotten them out of that country safely. He spared them from the misery of the plagues. He parted the Red Sea without losing a single person. He's made water come from rock. He's given them manna. He's given them meat to eat. He has blessed them and blessed them and blessed them abundantly, and yet still they wonder if God's going to continue to provide for them. And so they grumble against God, and this makes God mad. Not because you shouldn't go to God with your requests, but because their focus is not on God, their trust is not in the Lord, God is not their treasure. They become so self-focused that they begin to miss their calling for the sake of their craving, and because of that, they're now complaining. And so this makes God mad, and he warns them all. There's fire around the camp, and all of them know God must be mad at us. And some of us, if you're like me, some of us, you're just stubborn enough that you don't learn things the easy way. You have to learn things the hard way. Anyone else like that? Like, you can see the fire on the outside of camp. You know that you're stepping out of line from where God wants you, and you're just bullheaded enough to keep doing it anyway. And so sometimes when you miss God's warning, you end up facing his justice. And that's exactly what's going to happen to the people in Numbers chapter 11. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So that place was called Taberah because fire from the Lord had burned among them. The rabble with them, so if you remember back to Exodus chapter 12, we see that when the Israelites are leaving Egypt, they bring with them not just God's people, but a whole bunch of extra people who also want to leave Egypt and be spared. And so they have God's people and they have the others, the rabble, if you will. So this word literally means like gathering, but it's like a pejorative term for gathering. So it's kind of like, it's like what you would call the church when you're mad at the church. When the church isn't acting like the church, when they're not acting like the ecclesia, when they're not being the gathering of God's people, and they're just being a bunch of rebel rousers, right? And so he goes, right now, like, it's just the rabble. And so the rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost, and also the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. And let's take a look at this. There's a couple of things going on here. First of all, how many of us spend too much time listening to the rabble? How many of you allow the whispers of other people, the people outside of God's people, the people that aren't churching with you, they're not walking with you, they're not stepping in faith where you're stepping, they're not going where God goes. Like, God has his people, and then there's just the extras. There's the church-adjacent people. There's the rabble. And what happens is the rabble, because they don't trust in God, they haven't put their faith in God yet, they're usually the first ones to complain. They're usually the first ones to doubt. They're usually the first ones going, well, I don't know if God's really going to get us through. I know he got me through last time, but is he going to get me through this time? And God gives a lot of grace to all of you that, man, you're learning and you're equipping. And maybe you're on the first leg of the wilderness journey. Maybe you're one of those scrappy, desperate people clinging to God, and God's just teaching you how to be faithful. Because that's how everybody starts. Everybody starts in that first leg. They're not organized. They're not together. They're not focused. They're not mission-minded. They're just trying to just go, is God someone I can trust in? But to God's people, he's shown them, and he's shown them, and he's shown them, and they should know by now. The problem is they're not listening to God. They're listening to the others. I think far too many of us become complainers and get sidetracked from the mission of God because we have too many voices in our ear. God's people begin complaining against God because they're listening to the rabble of all of the others around them. And I think so often we as Christians today, we get the rabble in our ears. We hear the complainers, we hear the naysayers, we hear the people that are unfocused and uncertain and off mission, and their complaints become our complaints. And next thing you know, we're doubting God and we are complaining against God. Remember last week, move where God moves, stay in his rhythm, and he will work the rest of it out. One of the fastest ways to get outside of the movement and timing and rhythm of God is to start listening to the wrong voices. The rabble with them began to crave other food, and so the Israelites started complaining to God and began craving this other food. And they go, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. This is interesting because the fish in Egypt are affordable and abundant. They're not free, but they are abundant and they are affordable. That's just kind of what nostalgia does, right? You look back on how things used to be. And we always tend to remember it with a little bit more fondness than we actually felt when we were in the moment at that time. And so you go back to reread a childhood book, or you go back to see a movie you haven't seen in years, and very often it doesn't feel as good as you thought it was going to feel, because what happens is our nostalgia discolors our reality. We begin to believe the fantasy of the past instead of the reality of the past, and so we just start exaggerating how good things really were the moment we get off focus and stop following God. And so, again, they ate fish in Egypt. The fish were not free. That's just kind of what we do when we exaggerate. We go, oh, man, back in Egypt, we had all the fish we could eat, and it was all free. And here's the funny part, is God is giving them manna. God is continuing to provide food for them. And so if you don't remember what the manna is, that's back in Exodus chapter 16, where God is providing both manna and quail for them to eat, and the dew would fall on the ground at night, and in the morning it would be like this flaky bread, and they called it bread from heaven, and they described its flavor, and they loved it, and it provided for them, and it got them through, and it was good for them, and they enjoyed it, and they praised God for its flavor, and they praised God for its abundance, and here they are craving other blessings. Like, sorry, God, what you've given me isn't enough. I'm not satisfied with your provision because I'm not focused on where you've got me going. I'm too concerned with my current desires. You guys ever do that sometimes? Sometimes God's got you on a mission and he's going, look, we're thinking long term here. I'm growing you for the future. It's not about how comfortable you are today. It's not about where you end up tomorrow. We're talking way in the future. I've got a person that I'm growing you to be, and you're not getting there yet because you keep sacrificing long term gains for short term comfort. They would rather slow down the camp and everybody stop to have their cravings satisfied than to keep going to the place where they will be in the land of milk and honey and they don't have to worry about this stuff again. And so you understand why God would be so frustrated with this very faithless and rebellious people. Because, man, when we stop looking forward at what God has promised us, and we start looking back to what God has removed us from, don't make the mistake of remembering that as fonder than it actually was. Here they are remembering back. We remember the fish we ate at no cost, and the cucumbers, and the melons, and the leeks, and the onions, and the garlic, but now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. Can you imagine if you said that to your wife, men? Think about it like this. Can you imagine, like if you're one of the men in this room, if you're one of the privileged people in this room that God has gifted you with a bride, that you have a spouse that you love and they love you and you serve one another and you lead together and you walk together, and then one day you show up and you go, well, babe, you know, it's not that you're not awesome. It's not that I don't love everything about you. It's just I just want something different for a little while. I just have this craving. I just have this other desire. And so if you don't mind, I'm going to turn away from this blessing and I'm going to pursue other things. How many of you that would go over well in your household? Because here's the thing, man. Look, if you've been married any length of time, it is so easy to take your blessings for granted. If you're a married person, man, your spouse is a blessing. An unbelievable blessing. And if y'all are walking in God together and y'all are the kind of people where like your goal is just to get the other one to heaven and their goal is to get you to heaven and y'all are blessing each other and y'all are serving each other and y'all are loving each other, like that's your blessing. Like you're good. Like you don't need anyone else. You don't need anything else. You don't need to be looking at that stuff on your computer and you don't need to be eyeing those people when you walk by. Like you've got the blessing already. You've already got it. It's already there. You're already being taken care of. And single people, y'all do the same thing. God's like, man, I'm growing you to become somebody. I've got a purpose for you. I've got a mission for you. And you're so focused on your current desire. Some of y'all, you know the single people that like their number one goal is like find a mate. And God's like, man, I've got a life for you, and I've got a purpose for you, and I've got a promised land that I'm guiding you towards. And we go, I don't want any of that right now. I want what I want right now. Give me my spouse. I'll figure out the faith stuff later. I'll become the kind of person that even knows how to handle the blessing once you give me the blessing. And God doesn't fall for that. He knows better. He goes, no, you take the blessing I give you now, because if I give you too much and if I give you whatever you want, you'll squander the blessing and you'll end up with nothing. And so whether you're single or whether you're married, I mean, look around and go, man, am I rebuking my blessing because I've got a different craving? Has God given me so much and I'm just not seeing it because I'm self-focused right now? I'm focused on my own business, my own wants, my own needs, that I don't even realize what God is actually working out in my life right now. The people lost their appetite because all they have is the one thing that they used to praise God for. God gave them manna, and they said, God, this is delicious, and there's so much of it, and thank you so much, and you're so good, and you've been so favorable to us, and look, God, you really do provide a table for us, even though we're in the midst of this wilderness. And then you get over here in the Numbers, and they're like, really, more manna? You couldn't give us something else, God? You couldn't be a better God? You couldn't bless us more? You couldn't do more for me? Like, forget about your plan, and forget about where you're taking us. Forget about the promises. Forget about walking in faith. What about what I want? What about my desire? What about my own personal craving? This manna, he says, the manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. And the people went around and gathered it, and then they went around gathering it and then ground it in a handmill or crushed it in a mortar. And they cooked it in a pot or made it into loaves. And it tasted like something made with olive oil. And, of course, you got to remember the region they're in at that time and how significant olive oil was and is to that culture. That's a compliment. You read that verse and you're supposed to go, that sounds great. Like, that sounds really good. Like, I would want some of it. Like what he's pointing out to you is, this is a good thing. I gave you manna, and the manna's awesome. You should want the manna. We all like the manna. And they go, yeah, I just want something different. I don't care about that right now. What about what I want? So, when the dew settled on the camp and came up at night, the manna also came down. And then Moses, verse 9, yeah, that's good. Let's jump down. Yeah. So he's given them manna, and they want more. And then we talk about Moses for a little bit, and we're going to skip some of that. Verse 18, tell the people, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat. So God's going, you want meat? I'm going to give you meat. The Lord heard you when you wailed, if only we had meat to eat. We were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will eat it. You will not eat it for just one day or 2 days or 5 days or 10 or 20 days, but for a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wailed before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? And some of that's how you treat your faith, man. It's so past tense. You're so focused on where you used to be. You're so focused on how things were one time amongst God's people that you've got no mind for how it can be. You've got no idea for what could be. You're so focused on what it was back in Egypt that you can't even imagine all the good things that God has in store for you in the future. There's a C.S. Lewis quote. Let me see if I have it here. It's a simple quote, but I always get it wrong when I try to quote it. C.S. Lewis says, there are far, far better things ahead than any we leave behind. I feel like I searched too long for that quote. I feel like I don't know if the quote was worth it for searching that long. Think about that. There's far, far, way better things ahead of us than anything we've ever left behind. And I don't know if that hits anyone here this morning. But man, sometimes we just need to be reminded of that. God promises us better things tomorrow. He promises us a future for us. He promises to make a way for us. He promises us a purpose and a work for us to do. He promises us a life that's better than the life that we currently have. Like, God promises so many blessings, both in this life and in eternity in heaven. Like, the future is better for every one of us. Some of us just aren't ready yet because we're still stuck in the past. And he says, here you are wailing, why did we ever leave Egypt? He says, so I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you everything that you've been asking for. You guys recognize the trap, right? Like, y'all can see when God's setting up a test. Because he does the same thing in the New Testament. He does the same thing to you today. And so you look at Romans chapter 1. And they're just describing how sinful the culture around them in this Greco-Roman society has become. And so Romans chapter 1, you read around verse 22, 23, 24, right around there. And he tells them, he's like, man, they didn't want to worship me. They didn't want to focus on me. They didn't want to give their lives to me. They burned in their hearts for each other, for their own lust, for created things rather than the Creator. So you know what God does? So I gave them over to their lusts. That's what Romans 1 teaches us. I gave them over to their sin. I let them have it. Because here's what God's doing in your life right now. God will patiently work on you. And he'll nudge you, and he'll nudge you, and he'll grow you, and he'll guide you along, and you'll rebel against him, and you'll sin against him, and he'll forgive you, and he'll give you his abundant grace, and he'll teach you how to be a little bit better next time, and you'll get to walk through the wilderness with God as he prepares you for what's next. But to all of those people who go, you know what, God, I'm just not going to obey you. All I want to do is rebel. I don't actually care about your mission. I don't care about where you're taking me. What I really care about is, am I getting what I want? Are my needs met? Are my cravings satisfied? Are my desires being fulfilled? Because if you don't give me what I want, I'm not taking another step. If you're one of those people, often God's response is, fine, I'll give you everything that you want. And it will be to your shame. And it will be to your destruction. And you will not ever enter the promised land that I have for my people. Not because I'm not faithful, but because you chose your craving over your calling. So he says, I'll give it to you. Here I am. Moses speaks up. He says, here I am among 600,000 men on foot. And you'll say, I'll give them meat to eat for a whole month. He says, would they have enough if flocks and herds were slaughtered for them? So they're carrying all this livestock out of Egypt. He goes, man, we could kill everything we have, all the things that we're going to need to be able to survive in the promised land, all the herds that we're carrying into the future. We could slaughter all of those so that we would have meat. But even if we slaughtered all of those, I don't even think that would be enough. We've got 600,000 soldiers. That's just battle-ready soldiers. It's an interesting, nerdy Hebrew thing that most of y'all don't care about. But when he says, I have 600,000 men on foot, we read on foot. That on foot is a technical term that they would use to talk about foot soldiers. And so he's literally like going, the way we're counting all these people, I've got 600,000 battle-ready men, and then all of the other people, all of the men who aren't ready to go into battle or are too old to go into battle or are injured, all of the women, all of the children, on top of the 600,000 foot soldiers that he has ready to go. So he's got millions of people that he's trying to lead right now. He's going, God, we could kill every flock and every herd that we have, and it wouldn't be enough meat. And he says, would they have enough if all the fish in the sea were caught for them? And then God reminds Moses, he says, hold on, watch and see if what I do is true. Here's the point I want to make to you with that. Moses has the right of it. When you start pursuing your own desires and your own cravings, it's never enough. You don't ever have enough. You never get satisfied. When you pursue your own filling of your own hungry heart, you never get it filled. There's a whole bunch of people, man, you got all the stuff. You've got all the money, and you've got all the cars, and you've got the house, and you're having all the sex, and you're doing all the things to amass power for yourself, and you're trying everything you can to live a fulfilling life. And at the end of the day, there's an emptiness in here, because what you know is no matter how much you pursue pleasure, it's just never enough. There is not enough flocks and herds and fish in the sea to satisfy the hungry, craving heart of the selfish human being. Moses going, God, you're going to give him meat? It's not going to satisfy him. We would never have enough to satisfy that kind of heart. And some of you, man, that's just where you're at in life. Like, you're trying. You're trying on all the things. Some of you, you might be here at church right now because it's just another hat you're trying on. Like, let's see if this works. Let's see if this finally fills me. Let's see if this will be the next thing to satisfy my ceaselessly craving heart. And the message that God is teaching his people is, I'm what your satisfaction's in. I'm what your sufficiency is in. I'm enough. I get you through. I get you past this journey. I'm the one that provides for you. You don't have to worry about all of that stuff. You shouldn't chase after any of that stuff. If only you could understand how important making me the center of your life really is. If I was what came first in your life, you never would have asked these questions. You never would be wanting more. I would be what sustains you. You see how God concludes this down in verse 33. Now a wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea. So quail that migrates from Africa to the Mediterranean in the spring and then migrate back in the fall. This is not implausible. Now, how God does it is miraculous and crazy, but this event taking place, pretty normal. Like, this would be the time of year where there would just be flocks and flocks of quail flying nearby. And so God orchestrates a wind to just bring all of those in over the people of God. And so this wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea. And it scattered them up to 2 cubits deep, which is like 3 feet deep, all around the camp, as far as a day's walk in any direction. So you can take that a couple of ways. So in that time period, in fact, until not that long ago, an ancient practice in this area was to have these nets that you would set up like 3 to 5 feet off of the ground in order to catch flying birds, because these quail, man, when they fly low and they fly in these big packs. And so they were just literally holding up nets and catching quail. And so one way to read this text, if you're one of those people, you're just like, I don't like it when the Bible gets weird and too miraculous. One, let God be God, okay? Let miracles be awesome. Don't make everything a miracle, because then nothing's miraculous. And so when you see these cool parts, like, let God be God, this is good. But it you could read this and go, yeah, so what they're doing is they're catching all of these quail as they fly in a few feet off the ground. The more common way to understand this is God is just piling up quail 3 feet deep on the ground, which seems to make more sense, because when you read how much they collect, it would have to be piles and piles and piles of quail. And they would set them out and they would kind of let them like sun cure. And if you did that right, you theoretically wouldn't even have to cook it. They probably should have cooked theirs. I think they're going to pay for that. So 2 cubits deep all around the camp, as far as a day's walk in any direction. All that day and night and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers of quail. Then they spread them out all around the camp, probably to dry and cure them. But while the meat was still between their teeth, and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore, the place was named Kibroth Hattaava, because there they were buried, the people who had craved other food. Kibroth Hattaava means graves of craving. Graves of craving is what they named the place because of what God did that day. The question I had when I read this, and I was searching through chapter 11 going, God, give me an answer here, because like, you gave them the quail. Like you said, okay, guys, you want quail? I'm going to provide you quail, and then punish them for eating the very thing that you provided. Like, what's up with that? Like, why would you get so angry for them trying to take a hold of the thing that you gave to them? And so you don't find a great answer in Numbers 11. I mean, you do in context, but not any direct answer. But if you go into the Psalms, you see a few answers in the Psalms. We'll take a look at a couple of them. Psalm 106. The waters covered their adversaries. So God is reminding his people how he delivered them through Egypt. And so if you guys remember the movie, you've seen the Red Sea parted, anything like that, that's the story that he's been talking about. He says, the waters covered their adversaries, and not one of them survived. And then they believed his promises and sang his praise. And you guys remember that, right? God does this miracle. He parts the Red Seas, and everybody prays and sings and starts speaking poetry and setting up monuments to remember what God did. Like, everybody's like, wow, God is faithful. He gets me through. He takes care of us. All I have to do is trust in him. Like, they are in until it gets inconvenient. And the moment it gets hard, the moment the journey gets a little bit tough, or the moment we get a little bit bored, or the moment God doesn't move to the place or at the pace that we want, we stop being God-focused, we become self-focused, and then we start thinking not what God is doing in our life, but what do we desire, and where are our cravings? And so in this moment, they believed him, they're singing his praises, but they soon forgot what he had done and did not wait for his plan to unfold. See, some of y'all just complain too soon. That's all it is. God is frustrated with you, and you're not stepping where God's stepping only because you complained too soon. You didn't wait for God's plan to unfold. So often he's like, man, if you would have just walked through the process, if you would have done it my way, if you would have let me get you there, I would have gotten you there. I'm one of those people, if I diet for a day, I look in the mirror the next day. Like, let me see if I made any progress today. You guys do that? I can't be the only one. Like, I'll diet for 2 days. I'll be like, am I skinny yet? Oh, come on. I'm not always good at, like, seeing the plan unfold. Like, I get impatient, and I start craving other things, and my own desires get in the way. Janae is at home and really just doing ministry with me right now. So she left her past job, which she loved. I mean, left on good terms just because, man, stuff's busy around here. Like, our church is doing stuff. We're making moves, and God's blessing our ministry. And so we're getting to work a lot more together. And she's home a lot more, which means she's been meal prepping for me, which means she's been planning my meals, and I haven't been planning my meals. Y'all are about to see me get so skinny. Because now I no longer have an option, right? Like, I can't do anything but wait for the plan to unfold. But I can't give in to my cravings. There's nothing good to eat at my house anymore at all. Like, the moment she is home and, like, she's like, oh, don't worry about dinner. I'm cooking dinner tonight. I already went and got groceries. And so, like, our freezer no longer has frozen pizzas in it or any of the stuff that, like, I keep around. Like, I've eaten chicken and broccoli for, like, 2 weeks now. And look, it's manna. Like, I'm not complaining about it. Like, I'm enjoying actually getting to, like, eat with a goal rather than just eat to satisfy my own cravings. You guys follow me? Look, I'm one of those people, man. I don't see it through. Like, I'm really good at going, I'm going to get my life ready. I'm going to make this change. I'm going to do this thing. And then I just don't want to wait for the plan to unfold. I don't want to give it its time. I don't want to walk in it long enough. And so often I never get the blessing that I'm trying to get because I try to circumvent the plan and start doing things my own way. And God's looking at his people. He's going, man, if you would have just waited before you rebelled, before you complained, before you went your own way, before you decided you had to go after whatever you desired and stop focusing on God, if you would have just waited it out, you would have seen God's plan unfold, and you wouldn't be in this tricky situation that you're in. You wouldn't be facing the judgment of God. You wouldn't feel like you're being punished by God. All you did was go, God, I don't care about your plan because you're not doing it on my time. And God goes, fine, do it your way. Watch what happens. Watch what happens when I give you what you want, like you know better. They didn't wait for the plan to unfold. And so in the desert, they gave in to their craving. In the wilderness, they put God to the test. So he gave them what they asked for, but sent a wasting disease among them. And so if we jump back over to verse 33 and 34, we'll take a look again at what that is. While the meat was still between their teeth and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people and he struck them with a severe plague. So Psalm 106 calls this a wasting disease. Maybe some sort of severe food poisoning or something like that. They started eating this quail, and next thing you know, people are literally falling out and dying as a result of this. You get into Psalm 78, you see it this way. But they continued to sin against him, rebelling in the wilderness against the Most High. And they willfully put God to the test by demanding the food that they craved. They spoke against God, and they said, can God really spread a table in the wilderness? Guys, that's enough right there. If you haven't been, if you're just jumping into this sermon series and you're not following the story throughout Exodus, then maybe you wouldn't catch this here, okay? But their complaint that they have against God is we're not really sure if God is faithful to provide a table in the wilderness. That's not the first time you see that. You also see it in Exodus. They've already asked the question, does God provide a table? Will God set a table for me in the wilderness amongst my enemies? Is God really taking care of me? And God got them through the first leg of the journey by reminding them again and again, yes, I'm here and I'm working and I got you, and you don't got to worry about that, and you don't have to stress about that, and you don't have to wonder about where your next meal's going to come from, because as long as you're in rhythm with me, I will take care of you. Of course, I will set a table for you. Yes, even in the wilderness. And you get to the book of Numbers, and they set out. And the moment it gets tough, man, the moment they leave Mount Sinai and they start traveling, they become self-focused, self-consumed, self-obsessed. They're off mission. They're no longer letting God lead their life. They start giving in to their own cravings. And now they're not even sure if God does provide for them in the midst of their struggle. They're not even sure if God really can provide a table for them in the wilderness. Man, you read that and you're like, this is God being patient. Why hasn't God already taken care of this? Why hasn't God already removed them? And then you remember that they're like us. We're the rebellious ones, and we're the impatient ones, and we're the ones that focus on ourselves rather than focus on the mission of God. And God says, man, if you just walk in step with me, if you just build your life around me, like you focus on me, I'll take care of you. And then we go, but how can I trust that? How can I really know if you're actually going to take care of me? So he struck the rock, water gushed out, streams flowed abundantly, but can he also give us bread? Can he supply meat for his people? And when the Lord heard them, he was furious. His fire broke out against Jacob. His wrath rose against Israel, for they did not believe in God or trust in his deliverance. Everybody pay attention to that verse. Why is God killing his own people that are traveling with him, that have gone with him? Because at the end of the day, they didn't really believe. They didn't have faith. And there's a lot of people that will walk with God when it's easy, but when it gets hard, they don't have faith. When the journey gets tough, when they don't know the way, when they don't have all their cravings satisfied, when God doesn't give them all the free stuff that the TV preacher said that they were going to give them, when it doesn't work out that way, when they start walking in step with God and now they've got to own up to their past mistakes, they've got to start dealing with that past sin, all of a sudden God gets a whole lot harder to trust. They did not believe in God or trust in his deliverance. Man, there's so many people, they just want more. They're just not satisfied with what God's doing in their life. They need more of this or more of that, or better sermons and bigger churches and more spirituality and more deliverance. And at the end of the day, it says here, just believe in God. He'll deliver you. He'll take care of you. He's got you. He's enough. You don't have to search for more. You don't have to find something deeper. Like, God is there. All you have to do is build your life around him and watch him take you where he's trying to get you to go. Put your faith in him. Stop searching for other stuff. Stop trying to add on to your religion like God hasn't been faithful and gotten you exactly where you need to go. Trust him. Lean into him. Trust in his deliverance. Trust in his provision. Trust in his plan. He gave a command to the skies above and opened the doors of the heavens. He rained down manna for the people to eat. He gave them the grain of heaven. Human beings ate the bread of angels. He sent them all the food they could eat. He let loose the east wind from the heavens, and by his power, he made the south wind blow. He rained meat down on them like dust. Birds like sand on the seashore. He made them come down inside their camp, all around their tents. They ate till they were gorged. He had given them what they craved. You guys see the word there? Not what they're promised, not what they're called to, not what they're supposed to be desiring. He didn't give them what's going to satisfy their lustful heart. He didn't give them what's going to stop that lack of fulfillment that exists in them. He just gave them what they craved. You guys see the difference? And that's been the hardest thing for me in preparation for this sermon. Going, God, man, am I even good at discerning your calling versus my craving? Because sometimes we get ourselves into a mess when we start walking away from God's calling in order to indulge in our own craving. And the worst situation you can be in is God finally gets tired of trying to course correct. He gets tired of trying to nudge you along, and he finally says, I'm just going to give it to you. I'm going to remove you from what you're called to. I'm going to give you what you craved. And then we're going to name this place Graves of Craving as a result. He gave them what they craved. But before they turned from what they craved, even while the food was still in their mouths, God's anger rose against them. He put to death the sturdiest among them. He cut down the young men of Israel. In spite of all this, they kept on sinning. In spite of all these wonders, they did not believe. So he ended their days in futility and their years in terror. Whenever God slew them, they would seek him. They eagerly turned to him again. It's a tough lesson. This is a sobering lesson right here. I hope all of us will take a moment to pause on this. God, if you're a good God, why would you allow things to happen like this? Why would you allow me to endure discipline? Why would you make things so difficult? Why aren't you just blessing me? Why can't you just get over it and just let me be me? Because when I slay you, you turn back to me. When I take you down to rock bottom, when I remind you who I am, when I remind you exactly what happens when you follow your plan and go your way and stop putting your faith in me, when you believe in yourself, in your plan, but you don't believe in me and my purpose, I will give you over to your craving because that's how I get you back. God is always about the redemption of his people and the magnification of his name. And so he goes, man, even if I have to take you down in order to get you to turn to me, that's what I'll do. He says, God slew them. And whenever God slew them, they would seek him. I don't have time to get into any of this, but if any of y'all are searching for this very deep theological question of how can God call some people to him, and yet at the same time, slay others and not allow other people to be saved and still claim to be a good God that desires all people to be saved. And the answer is here. Because some people, the only way they're going to turn back to me is when they see people punished by the righteousness of God. And so God's like, man, I will deal discipline to my people to get them to turn back to me. I will give them justice. I want to give them grace, and I want to give them mercy, and I want to love on them. I want to just take care of all their needs. But if they choose it, if they choose their craving, they get justice for their craving. Because I know, man, when I give people justice and I take them to that low point in their life, some of them get exactly what they asked for. They just get justice of God, and they get to pay the price of their sins off their own flesh. And some of them, that wakes them up, and they turn back to him. And so whenever he slew them, they sought after him again. And so God goes, man, if that's just how I have to deal with you, that's what I'll do. To some people, the more I bless them, the more I encourage them, the more I strengthen them, the more they do for me, and the faster they go, and the more blessings they receive. Like the more I bless them, the more they work for the kingdom, the more they trust in me, the more the stars align for them by God's sovereign will and by his grace, because as God calls them, they just go. And then there's other people who goes, man, it's discipline. discipline is going to be the only way I can get them to turn to me. So their life's going to be a little bit different than the person getting all the blessings. You get to choose. Which one do you want to be? Do you want to be the person fixated on God? He's your treasure and he's the center of your life and he's what all of this is about. And because of him, not because of you, it has nothing to do with your pride and your ego and your ability, not because of anything that you've done, but just because of who he is growing you towards a life you never could have achieved without him. And then some of you, he's like, I'm just going to keep bringing you low because that's the only way you ever get to the promised land in the end. If you don't kill your cravings will kill you. This is what this is. This is graves of craving. It's death by desire. It's all the people who said, I'm not believing in God. I'm not going after God. I want to do it my way. And God's just trying to tell me. He's like, man, don't you know? You don't follow me because I give you manna. You follow me because I am the manna. You don't follow me because I bless you with good things. You follow me because I'm the blessing and I'm the good thing. You get nothing outside of me. You're just on your own. You're just subject to the whims of the world, man. You're happy one day. You're depressed the next day. You're good one day. You're anxious the next day. Like when you do it your way, it's up to you and you do it poorly because you don't make a very good God. Trust me. God's message just repeatedly, man, believe in me. I am the way and the truth and the life. No one gets to the Father except through the Son. Jesus explains that to his people in John chapter 6. We'll close with this text. In John chapter 6, he's explaining to his people, he's like, man, he's like, he feeds 5,000 people. They come back to him. They follow him the next day. And so he's like, man, I kind of think that you're here because you want another meal. And so then he says, he's like, look, don't work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him, God the Father has placed his seal of approval. Then they asked him, what must we do the works God requires? What must we do to do the works that God requires? There we go. They're going, I want that. I want eternal life. I want to endure. I want food that doesn't spoil. What do I have to do to get it? And all God's been trying to teach his people in the wilderness is it's not about you. It's not about your works. It's not about what you do. You structure your life around me. Make me the priority. Make me the focus. Make me the center of your life. I'm the one that does the saving work. And so they go, well, we want this bread. What must we do to do the works that God requires? And Jesus answers, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. You just got to believe. Trust him. Put your faith in him. Stop trying to do the work. Stop trying to do it your way. Stop trying to achieve your own blessing. Stop trying to just walk in your own calling your way. Give in to him. Accept your calling and say no to your craving. He says, they ask him, they say, what sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness. As it's written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. And Jesus replies, very truly I say to you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And so they say, give us the bread. Always give us this bread. We need this bread abundantly. And Jesus declares, I am the bread of life. Man, you've already got it. You've already got what you need. You're just not focused on it. You've already been given the biggest blessing that you can get. If you're a Christian, you've already got the manna. You've already got the saving grace. Like God already forgave you of that. Stop trying to achieve it. Stop trying to work at it and just give in to him. Focus your life around Jesus and let Jesus be what you can't be on your own. He says, I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me, and yet you still do not believe. All those the Father gives me will come to me. And whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all of those he has given me, but raise them up at the last day. There's a lot of theology there. I don't really have time to unpack all of it. Notice, God just killed a bunch of people in the wilderness because they weren't focused on him. They weren't doing it his way. He just let them go. He says, you don't get the promised land. You're not coming with me. And then Jesus in the New Testament goes, I'm the bread, I'm the manna, I'll get you there. And they go, okay, well, how can we do it? How can we follow it? What work do we have to do? How can we achieve this? And he goes, here's what you don't understand. I'm the one doing the work, and all of those that are going to enter the promised land, I'm not going to lose a one of them. I'm not going to lose a one. So, man, if you're one of those people that's being brought low, you're either never going to the promised land in the first place, or God's getting your attention. He's going, when I slay them, they turn back to me. So I'm trying to get them to turn back to me. And God's doing that. I mean, in our church, he's doing that to some of you right now. He's bringing you low on purpose. And you're going, God, what about what I want? He's going, it's not about what you crave. It's about what you need. I'm not giving you what you want. I'm giving you what you need to experience so that you can become the person that I'm growing you to be, so that you can get the bread of heaven and experience eternal life. Nobody falls out of this. There's nobody lost in this equation. I shall lose none of all of those he has given me, but I will raise them up on the last day. So God has all these people. He's moving them to the promised land. And as he's moving them, he's taking all of those who he's going, they're never going to obey me. They're only going to rebel. They're only going to slow down the progress. So I'm going to remove them. We're going to call this area the graves of craving, because we're going to put that to death right now. And everybody else I'm taking with me are all the people that know I come first because I am what sustains them. Man, the Christians that make it, the Christians that live this life well and enter an eternity of blessing, or just all the people who go, it's not about me, I'm not focused on me, I'm not self-consumed, I'm not self-obsessed, I gotta focus on him. And if I focus on him, he'll work out the rest of it, because God provides the bread of life. All I have to do is put my faith in him. And they go, what works do we have to do? And he says, believe. Well, why'd you punish the people in Egypt? They didn't believe. Well, why'd you punish the people in the wilderness? Because they didn't believe. Well, what do I have to do to get the eternal life? You just got to believe. Put your faith in me. Stop trying to do it on your own. Trust me. I got you. I never stopped loving you, and I will keep providing the manna. Trust in me. I'll take care of you. And if you're one of mine, not one of you are going to be lost before I raise you up at the last day. So, man, if you're here this morning, maybe the message is this: stop trying so hard. And stop making it about you. Stop complaining. Stop listening to the complainers. Stop listening to the rabble. Stop letting other people control your attitude. Stop taking your eyes off of what God is blessing you with in order to focus on what you're just desiring and what you're craving. Allow God to point you towards your calling instead of just your craving. And when you kill your craving to pursue your calling, you never have to be one of those people in the grave for the sake of going after the things you wanted instead of what God has called you to. So, man, I know I say this all the time, but we're going to end this way. There is an abundant life of blessing in the Christian walk, but it's not focused on you. It's a radical surrendering of self. God, I trust you. You're enough. You're the source of my blessing. You are the bread of life. So the closer I get to you, the more you will get me to where you're growing me to be. And so, man, my prayer for all of you, put your faith in him. Give your life to Jesus. Let him be enough. Kill the craving and step into your calling. If you don't know how to do that, come forward. Let us talk to you. You can do that right now as we stand and as we sing.